This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us on Failing Forward, the show that's all about embracing failures in the entrepreneurship journey. As always, joining me on the show is Chief Explorer at Proficio, Renuka Sena. Renu, how has December been treating you?
Morning, Audrey. December seems to be a little bit of a mad rush. I think a lot of us are trying to complete whatever we had planned for the year before a certain time period. I have a personal cutoff of the 20th of December, so that, you know, I actually get a break. So that's how it's going.
So is this traditionally an extra busy month for entrepreneurs, or are most businesses and startups starting to begin to wind down for the year?
I think with startups, there's no such thing as wind down. It's go all the way. It's probably a little frustrating for them because their clients may be winding down. But I think generally startups, especially in this year, they're trying to make the most of every single day.
Right. So on this episode of Failing Forward, which is the last episode for the year 2020, we're going to be continuing our discussion on how the pandemic shook some startups this year, their fails, their pivots, their learnings. And we're going to talk about how startups have pivoted to continue to support their ecosystem during this pandemic. Correct, Reno?
Yeah. This is a topic, Audrey, that's particularly close to my heart. And I think that that's because most of the time when you have conversations about startups or scale-ups, it's always about the tech that they are developing and how they may be innovative in changing the world, digitization, those kinds of things. And most of the time, you know, although we talk about startups being small, very nimble teams that have knowledge workers, but what's often forgotten is that the business that they are actually operating actually supports an entire ecosystem. And this in particular, I think when we did or when we worked with the micro entrepreneurs in my Level Up program with MDEC, what we found was that the startups may be small. They may have up to maybe 5-man teams. But because the way they sell is via agents or distributors, they work with suppliers, every sale that they make impacts both the downstream, meaning that, you know, the distributors sell, it impacts the startup. The more sales the startup gets, they order more from their suppliers. So it's an entire ecosystem that is supported by these micro entrepreneurs and these startups. And that is, in essence, what, you know, the economy of a startup is.
Right. And you have some case studies to share with us, right, Renu?
Yes, I do. So the first startup that I wanted to talk about is IGL Coating. So if you remember, they were actually on the show earlier this year. So Kyung, and if we remember what IGL does, they actually are a manufacturer of nanocoating for the automotive sector. And for IGL in particular, you know, I keep going back to them to ask them what their Malaysian sales are. But Malaysian sales are literally about 1, maximum 2% of their entire business. They primarily are exporters. But they are also, in a sense, I mean, their technology is nanotech and their product is literally manufactured. So when COVID hit, and this is something, you know, Kyung's co-founder Fiona said to me, she said, well, you know, keeping your automobiles clean was hardly the most important thing in the COVID situation or during MCO, because it was non-essential in that sense, right? It's not a priority.
You try telling that to my husband, Reno.
Okay, fine. I'll not go there. So when that kind of happened, two things. First was, across the board, everyone was told to shut down until it was decided what were essential sectors and what were non-essential sectors. And because they're a manufacturer and they've got a lot of products already made, it's actually very difficult, because how do they continue to survive if they can't sell their products and they can't ship overseas, because this is not a purely Malaysian pandemic. So they kind of brainstormed really quickly and decided that, you know, Kyung has always maintained that a lot of their coatings have multiple uses. It's just that they decided to focus on the automotive sector. So what they did, in essence, was they tweaked the formula so that it was more in terms of surface cleaning sanitizing products, meaning, you know, even if you were to go back to the office or if you needed to actually keep the hospitals clean or clinics or things like that, you would need really strong and effective sanitization products. And that's what they decided to do. And as the markets opened up, then, you know, they started exploring whether or not they could actually sell these products overseas. And the one thing, you know, going back to the topic of the day, is that not only does IGL actually sell overseas, but they sell via detailers and distributors, meaning they actually sell to entrepreneurs all around the world. And those entrepreneurs then sell to the ultimate consumer. So this pandemic actually like kind of affected all of those guys. It's not just IGL that was affected. And so when they came up with these surface sanitization products, it gave all of these so-called downline, you know, the detailers as well as the distributors, something else to sell, which would help sustain them during this pandemic. And I think that for IGL in particular, they literally support, I think, close to 5,000 quote-unquote entrepreneurs around the globe.
Wow.
And by pivoting, they've actually ensured that, you know, the majority of these guys could still sustain a business, make and sell their products throughout this pandemic when everyone else was suffering.
Right. Interesting. Now, I know that many businesses decided to completely pivot 180 and move into creating sanitizers or masks or PPE during this time, whether it was just to help out or for a tweak to their business model. But I mean, like, you don't really think about the effect of the retailers that you support and the distribution to, because most of these guys who would carry IGL products would be in the automotive sector, right? And now for them to have a product that could actually sell during this pandemic would have been godsend.
Yeah. And so that there was a cascading effect of the pivot, really, because, you know, in order to survive, a lot of my micro entrepreneurs did this as well. They all came up with, you know, so-called COVID essential products, whether it was sanitizers or whether it was masks or things like that.
Speaking of creating masks, I know your next case study is about Batik Boutique, who has also pivoted into creating PPE and masks during the pandemic, right?
Yes, that's right. So Amy of Batik Boutique, I mean, you know what they create. They support primarily artisans and single moms from the PPP flats, and they're a social enterprise. So a lot of the things that they sell are viewed as non-essential items because they may be bags or scarves or things like that. But just like Kyung, Amy supports these artisans and these single moms. And these are, you know, almost the other end of the scale. If they don't work on a daily basis, they essentially don't make money. And everything that they make is just about enough to sustain themselves. They don't have savings. And so Amy basically had to immediately go back to the product line and think, what can we do? So the first thing that they did really was, you know, they decided to go and open up their sewing centers so that they could actually make the PPE suits, because there was such a, you know, in the early days, there was really a lack of it because we weren't prepared for it. And, you know, they had the sewing machines, they had skilled workers, so they applied to actually get this exemption to open, and they started doing that. And, you know, Amy will tell you that didn't make them any money at all, in the sense that it didn't make Batik Boutique sufficient funds to for their future. But her focus was purely on giving work to these sewing centers, sewing center staff, so that they could sustain themselves. And that kind of gave her a purpose and gave her time to actually think about, okay, what else can we do? And that's when she launched into this the Batik face mask, essentially.
And I know that the Batik Boutique masks are actually a really good seller.
Yes, I mean, something which, you know, wasn't even on their product line before March, now contributes about 25% of their sales. You know, and again, you may ask me, yeah, so did everybody else. I mean, that literally, there were hundreds of different products from different manufacturers on Lazada and Shopee and, you know, even everywhere else that you could buy. But I suppose, even though the mask that Batik Boutique was creating was primarily batik so that they could sustain their ecosystem. But it's not the same as to say, I make one product and it's going to sell. You got to completely kind of rethink the different types of masks that you sell. So Amy will tell you things like, you know, they created the ones which could actually add on the disposable masks on the inside. They did reversible masks. They did masks which were biodegradable. They did all sorts of different masks just so that they would have a new product launch to sustain continued sales as they went. And, you know, the good thing about masks is that after a while, people also wanted to have kind of prettier masks, and they were a little bit more conscious of the environment and not wanting to just buy the disposable masks. And so they started getting sales even from the US. Singapore was a big market. The Middle East was a big market. So, you know, they started actually getting sales from all over the world, pivoting into this sort of primarily B2C market, even though prior to COVID, their core business was actually more B2B.
Yeah, the focus is always on corporate packages.
That's right. Because you see, the thing is that, you know, like it or not, the sector that pivoted very quickly into buying online was the B2C sector. And with Batik Boutique primarily having B2B as their revenue generator, whilst they were doing all of these masks, I think another, and it's not really a pivot, but I suppose it's a way of thinking out of a box to see what could they do to actually continue to tap into the B2B sector. And there were some interesting things that kind of came out. And this is not necessarily Malaysia, Audrey. So, you know, one of their clients was actually wanted to organize a virtual conference. And in the early days, I mean, these were things that, you know, a lot of people were doing because they had already planned their conferences and they couldn't actually carry them out. So they wanted to do the virtual conferences. And because with conferences, people kind of fly in from all over the world. So they actually had these participants that were literally from all over the world, but stuck in their home countries and going to be dialing in virtually. So in order to kind of continue to engage, Amy had proposed that essentially they would send them goodie bags from the organizer all over the world. And so these goodie bags included things like, you know, a nice face mask, they would have a reusable bottle, there would be a small like sanitizer in there, which was in a sense nice to receive when you're sitting at home, even though you may not be using them, but it's useful for the participants as they went about their daily life. So in that way, Amy continued to be able to serve the B2B market.
Right. Okay, Renu, it's about time for us to take a quick break. But when we come back, we'll have more case studies, fails and learnings that will hopefully help you rethink your 2021 game plan. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Begin fun moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
You are listening to Failing Forward. My name is Audrey Raj. Chief Explorer at Proficio Renuka Sena is joining me via Zencaster this morning, and we are discussing how COVID-19 shook some startups this year and what they did very quickly to pivot to support their ecosystem of suppliers, distributors, artisans, and so much more. Renu, what is our next case study about?
So, you know, going back to the topic of the day, Audrey, which is essentially not so much the fail of each of the startups, but how a lot of the customers that the startups were actually providing their services or their products to, how they were caught unaware and unprepared for MCOs and COVID around the world. And one of those startups really was Cento. So Cento is basically an app. And when they first started out in the market, I think they were one of the first to actually offer so-called on-demand at-your-home massages, which give you the full spa experience. So, you know, their therapists would actually come with the massage tables. They would put a diffuser there with the essential oils and give you the whole spa experience, but in your home. Now, with COVID, essentially, they were considered not just a non-essential service, but a high-risk service, because you didn't want strangers coming into your house and you didn't know where they'd been. And it's already had three customers of the day, you don't know where those customers had been, right? So they literally had to pivot to start selling vouchers and products like essential oils and things like that. And whilst in the beginning, that kind of gave them a certain amount of runway, so to speak, for them to survive. But the ones that were really affected were their therapists. Now, their therapists really are, you know, in a sense, gig economy type of workers, right? They work as much and as often as they like. They earn as much as they want, depending on how hard and how often they want to work. And this was not just a problem that Cento was having, because, you know, all other beauty salons, physiotherapy, spas, they were all also considered high risk and well, essential is really subjective because I really needed a haircut badly, but it was considered high risk, right? So what Pivot Cento decided to come up with was that they already had their app where they could manage their internal management and booking, and they had a therapist app as well for the therapist to manage, you know, their customers and how they would get there and things like that. And this model, although when they started was their differentiation factor, it was something that they started getting a lot of calls from beauty centers and wellness providers to actually say, how do we actually do this? How do we put in place the SOPs and actually send therapists out to our existing customers? And this, of course, is, you know, when the MCO kind of started loosening up. And that gave them an idea to basically pivot their entire model when they were not, the model was no longer their differentiation factor, but it became their core product to then provide other wellness centers and spas and physiotherapy and, you know, even hairdressers and things like that with the ability to actually continue to serve their existing customers, but by sending therapists out to the home so that it would make it non-high risk in that sense. So they now, you know, they came up with the idea, they built an MVP, they started talking to a few centers, especially the ones that called them to say, you know, teach us how to do this. And when they found that there was actually a need, they went online on one of the equity crowdfunding platforms and decided to raise funds with this new idea. In the throes of COVID and doing everything online, they actually managed to raise close to $750,000 to actually grow this completely new business and change how they were surviving in that sense. But the reason we're doing this show is, you know, not so much how did Cento pivot, but how did Cento's pivot actually help the ecosystem around there. And so you're looking now at, because of their pivot, now a lot more spas and beauty centers have a way to continue to be relevant. They've digitized and they can continue to keep all of their therapists employed. It also allows for a lot more of the gig economy workers to now have a larger pool of merchants, so to speak, to say, okay, I have this skill. Who are the merchants out there? And I can work for you as a gig economy worker, maybe 2 hours in a day. So this ecosystem now has a means to not just survive, but evolve because of a pivot from one startup.
That's lovely. Now, we have one more case study to go, Renu, and I hope that it's going to be better than the one from Sinto. You've got to end it on a high.
Okay, so that's, let's see what we can do. Okay, so, I've got an interesting story on top of what I originally thought of talking about. So this startup is essentially Supply Bunny. And the founder, Keng Yu, I mean, I've literally known him for close to 12 years, I think. And Keng Yu, to me, is the epitome of innovation. I mean, he's always thinking about what can I do to improve? How can I improve? What do I do? And he's never afraid of failure, which is something I admire very much about him. So Supply Bunny, essentially, again, B2B business. And they used to basically supply F&B outlets, hotel chains, restaurants. They would sell them with their essential F&B raw materials, so to speak, whether it came directly from a manufacturer, whether it came from overseas, frozen stuff, vegetables, fruits, you know, those kinds of things. And we all know that when MCO first started, essentially all of these restaurants were asked to close down, and they had to think about how they could actually survive. Now, while all of that was going on, Kenya had a bigger problem, which was it was not just the restaurants that had to close down and think about what they had to do, but those guys essentially had an option because there were food delivery services, and food delivery services were allowed. So they were, you know, they didn't really, for want of a better word, their business was affected, but it wasn't so badly affected that they couldn't find a way to move forward. But for suppliers, it was a problem because, so when I talk about suppliers here, I talk about people who were providing these raw materials, right? So whether it was veggies or fruits or frozen meat and fish, these are the sort of suppliers who now thought, okay, you know, if all of the restaurants are kind of on minimal sales, how am I going to sell my products? So Keng Yu decided that he would gather all of these suppliers, online, of course, and have an open discussion to talk to them about how could they continue to actually survive. And he had to educate them to pivot into a direct delivery to customers type of model. And a lot of these guys, you know, they are from traditional industries. And in a traditional industries, a pivot is not something that you want to snap your fingers and do overnight. It really is, you know, trying to convince them that, look, there is a market. It's just that how you supply to them needs to be different. So instead of having your one-ton lorry going out to a certain geographical area to deliver, you may now have to put a chill truck outside a high density consumer area where people could actually come and buy from you, or where you could do deliveries much easier. And you know, I mean, one of the big wins in terms of coming out of COVID was that many people were also not going to the supermarkets because the supermarkets were considered high risk. So there was a lot of ordering online. I mean, I ordered everything from chicken to frozen fish to fresh fish to prawns that came live to the house. Yeah, I know. That was a shocker to actually see the prawns still moving. I was like, oh my God, what do I do with this? But, you know, so he had to educate all of these guys. And from all of the suppliers that he had, he managed to actually convince about 300 suppliers to deliver direct to the consumer. And when they agreed to do this, he essentially changed his entire website, their app, and even the way they sold to Facebook. So his app now, which used to be a purely B2B ordering system, is now a fully fledged e-commerce consumer-friendly app. All of their advertising now is on Facebook. They do Facebook Live to talk about their products. And this although it came as a shock in the early part of March and April, was slowly then transformed so that the suppliers could also survive. And Supply Bunny's reason for being in that sense was actually then to open up the consumer market so that the suppliers could actually continue to have sales. And with Supply Bunny, and in a way their suppliers as well, they had close to 6x growth in over 2019, you know. And Kengyu will say to me, what people see is, you know, what works. And they think, wow, you were so innovative and you actually did this and you grew 6 times. But in doing that, nobody sees what happens in the background and how you literally, like, you know, it's like your duck in a lake where you look really calm on the outside, but your legs are furiously paddling on the underwater to actually survive.
Yeah. Yeah. Now here's the thing. When listening to these last two case studies with Supply Bunny and with Sento, it just makes you think that these startups now have a new game plan for 2021 because of COVID-19 and the pandemic. So yes, they may have struggled initially, and I bet they struggled a lot in the background, and, you know, being stuck at home during the lockdown, and also, you know, worrying about their workers, their suppliers, their distributors, their artisans, their therapists. But all of a sudden, with innovation and also the concept of sharing, they have a new game plan, a new lifeline, a new source of income for 2021.
Yes, and a much stronger business model going forward, because, you know, even when we coach these entrepreneurs, we often tell them that the B2B and the B2C market are actually very different, and they need to deploy different marketing strategies. How they actually work with their B2B customers is very different from how they would sell to B2C. But what COVID has shown, or what the MCO has shown, is that many of these startups who were primarily B2B in the past now are serving both sectors. And because of the boom of e-commerce, the B2C sector has actually boomed in a sense.
Exactly.
Sorry to interrupt. I actually promised you a slightly better story than Sento.
So you've got the icing on the cake here, or the cherry on the icing.
Yes. And this is, you know, it wasn't a major strategy of Supply Bunny, but it's something that they found happened. So, you know, one of the things that affected the suppliers was also that, you know, foreign workers were seen to be high risk and couldn't actually help in at source, so to speak, you know, where they were packing the vegetables separately, or cleaning and cutting and washing the fish and those kinds of things. And so what they found was, you know, as they went to some of these condos, they would have, you know, these aunties coming and buying bulk. To a certain extent, I suppose, you know, some of the suppliers didn't really ask these questions, but Kengyu noticed this in terms of, like, you know, their app actually registered that one person bought so much. So they actually kind of called these people and said, you know, trying to understand whether there was, you know, something that they were missing in terms of this bulk buying. And what they found essentially was that, you know, some of these aunties were innovative in themselves. And because there were a lot of people that were still working from home and didn't really have time, they would actually buy in bulk, clean, cut, wash, and repack, and then sell to other people in the condo.
Excellent.
Isn't it? I mean, I think, you know, we discount the fact that, you know, human beings and not just entrepreneurs can actually be innovative. And so he did a little bit more research, and then he found that essentially, you know, there were a few of these aunties in various condos that were actually doing it. And so he launched, for a very short period of time, mind you, it wasn't like a long-term strategy that was going to grow their business. But he launched this program of anyone who wanted to actually replicate this model, where you would provide value-added services to grocery shopping and to cutting and cleaning and packaging. And he actually did get a decent size of people who actually did this. And because they were buying in bulk, they would make a margin on top of that for all of the services that were rendered. And I love that story. Through a pandemic or through these unexpected things that come, human beings are naturally innovative, irrespective of age or gender or anything like that. And, you know, I think we all know that our moms were very innovative in stretching the budget, ensuring that the family had enough food, but, you know, with just a small amount of money. And these aunties essentially were the epitome of that.
Exactly. Okay, so you fulfilled your promise, Reno. You ended the show on a high with a really good one. Thank you for that. And on that note, thank you, Reno, for all the sharings, not only on this episode, but for the year. And wishing you the best for 2021 and all there is to come.
Thank you, Audrey. And just one last thing. In the last episode, we talked about the launch of our CSR project, the Kita Mall.
Yes.
It's now fully operational. We have 70-odd products and services that are on our website and ready for sales. And, you know, whether it's something that you need to buy as a F&B product, so you've got, you know, everything from keropok to sambals to very nice spices, right through to health and beauty and fashion. And, you know, I think that a lot of times people go to Lazada and things like that, and a lot of these startups are drowned in the noise of these marketplaces. So if you want to kind of not go into the shopping mall, not have to browse through the entire Lazada, Shopee kind of marketplace, and just find some interesting Malaysian-made products, please go to proficio.com/kitamall.
Yes, support local as much as you can.
Absolutely.
Right. I've been speaking with Renuka Sena, Chief Explorer at Proficio. And if you missed out on any part of this show, the podcast of this interview will be up on our website, bfm.my, within the hour. You can also catch up on all the Failing Forward episodes on the BFM app, on iTunes or on Spotify. Just search for Failing Forward. We'll be back again with a brand new episode to kick off 2021 in the month of January. Till then, on behalf of Renu from Proficio, thank you for listening. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.